My name is Jodie Matthews, and I'm an academic researcher at the University of Huddersfield. This podcast is part of a review of academic literature that was funded by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. I'm going to be talking about why I think it matters that we continue to discuss and write about the way that Romanies or Gypsies, Roma, and Irish and Scottish travellers are represented in history, the arts, and other cultural forms. Some of what you'll hear is informed by a workshop at which people from different professions and perspectives discuss these issues. This doesn't constitute new research, but uses what other academics have said on this subject over the last 10 years to make some general points about the way academics do arts and humanities research in relation to these communities. I'll be explicitly naming some authors where their work is a good example of a point I wish to make. If you want to see a full list of the works I consulted, you can find one online at the project page, which is part of the University of Huddersfield Academy for British and Irish Studies website. If you have any questions about this work, please contact me on j.matthews, with two t's, at hud.ac.uk. The most common approach in academic work is to discuss the otherness of Romani or Gypsy, Roma and Irish and Scottish traveller identities. People tend to look at the collective differences between them as a group and the majority culture of non-Romanies, non-Roma and non-travellers, rather than emphasising similarity and interaction between these two sections of society as they're perceived. Most of the academic work published relates to Romanies or Gypsies. The attention paid to Irish travellers outside Ireland has been very small in comparison, with even less focus on Scottish travellers. The academics who undertake research in this area are, for the most part, people from outside these communities, or people who do not choose to identify themselves in this way, with some notable exceptions. There are seven key reasons that academic work on the histories and representations of these communities matters. Number one, in contemporary British culture, there's a lack of understanding about the diverse histories of these groups. People are confused about the differences between European Roma, Romanies, Irish and Scottish travellers and new travellers, often using the word gypsy or traveller to mean any one of those groups. If academics continue to write about the similarities and differences between the historical narratives of these communities in Britain and the ways in which those histories are intertwined with other ones, the degree to which the rest of the population understands our shared but distinctive histories may increase. Related to this is number two. These groups are usually considered in collective isolation rather than as part of mainstream British history. We do not usually hear about these communities in relation to their military service, for instance, or in relation to Britain's culinary history, our rural history, or medical history. These communities have been written out of those stories, and it's time to write them back in. Number three in this list of why scholarship on the histories and representations of these communities matters relates to the concept of an authentic gypsy of the past, something I'll be talking much more about in a moment. Experiences failing to match this visible stereotype of the authentic gypsy are neglected and disappear from the narratives about these groups in Britain. We are prone to repeat the familiar image as truth rather than questioning why it might be so familiar. Number four in the list is that the definition of terms like gypsy, whether used as a slur or reappropriated as a proud description of identity, is an ongoing process, and scholarship can contribute to both the undermining and, if we're not careful, the reinscription of the stereotypes that terms like this connote. Number five. In writing about the atrocities committed against Romanies and Roma in Europe, there's a danger of focusing only on specific instances, such as the Nazi persecution of the Roma and Sinti, as if those events were an aberration, rather than focusing on the systematic abuse of these groups by European states and communities. However, Romani and Roma history in Europe amounts to more than victimhood. They were active members of communities with a vibrant culture and engaged in trade and social interaction with non-Roma. There is still considerable work to do to retrieve these experiences from the archive. This is connected to point number six. The history of persecution of these groups informs contemporary identities in Britain. These persecutions have not yet been fully recognised as part of broader histories, even with the recent dedication of a memorial to Roma and Sinti victims of the Nazis in Berlin. Many in Britain still omit these groups when discussing the Holocaust or slavery. Point number 7 in this list of reasons to continue thinking about Gypsy or Romany, Roma and Irish and Scottish traveller histories and representations, is that when written and oral histories and autobiographies of and by members of these communities are discussed, they are sometimes co-opted into narratives about nation, modernity and ethnicity, and are used to perpetuate exoticism and prejudice. In other words, they're used to tell other people's stories, rather than being found interesting and valuable in their own right. Certainly, ideas such as nation, modernity and ethnicity inform the constructed image of these identities, but we run the risk of just talking about those ideas and neglecting the identities to which they contribute. For instance, some literary scholars have a tendency to see Romany or Gypsy characters only as a marker for the strangeness of particular non-Gypsy characters, such as Orlando in Virginia Woolf's work or Maggie Tulliver in George Eliot's The Mill on the Floss, rather than seeing the Romany or Gypsy characters in their own right. British literature has stereotyped our Romany or Gypsy population for centuries in the name of art. The least we can do now is see what these texts tell us about attitudes towards this marginalised and abused group, rather than seeing them only as a foil for white, middle or upper class characters. There are academics writing today, such as Deborah Epstein Nord, who are skilled at interpreting art, literature and other forms in this way. The final point on this list is that policy and legislation are based on all this knowledge about these groups that scholarship can open to critique and question. It's the job of academics to interrogate the foundations on which the state treatment of these communities is based. This is not an issue confined to the social sciences, but an area in which researchers in the arts and humanities can make an important contribution to understanding the context and communication of equality, human rights, ethnic identities, and relationships between communities. It's important to turn now to terminology. What terms will I be using? Why have I chosen to use these rather than others, and why does it matter? For centuries, people from outside these communities have assigned labels to people for different reasons. Debates about terminology take place in the shadow of two European genocides against the Romany people. These terms have been used to mark individuals for murder and persecution. They continue to be variously used as racial or ethnic slurs, reasons to deny people jobs and homes, a banner for political unity, and an identity through which one might claim rights and services. Perhaps most importantly, they are also, to some individuals, just who they are. Michael Hayes has written extensively about Irish travellers. He notes that one of the most powerful forces the modern nation-state has had in its battle against travellers is the power of definition. How their culture is defined is frequently beyond the control of travellers themselves. Ian Hancock, a Romany academic, uses the term gypsy, with a lowercase g, to refer to fiction, and Romany to refer to reality, and insists that we should echo this practice. We should be using the term Romany when we talk about people's lives and experiences. In Britain, many Romanys assert their identity as gypsies, even though people started using that term because of the mistaken belief that the group originally came from Egypt. While it does not please everyone, this reappropriation of the term gypsy in Britain carries with it a specifically British history of the community, which some are keen to claim, because it distinguishes their story from the Roma in Europe. In contrast, some Romany activists and writers think it's more helpful to think about a transnational Romany identity, which emphasises the commonalities of Romany culture across the diaspora. Ian Hancock offers very clear explanations of various terms in his book We Are the Romany People, published in 2002. In this podcast, I will usually say Romanys or Gypsies to mean British Romanys. I will say non-Romany rather than Gorgia for similar reasons as to why I'd say non-Jewish rather than Gentile when referring to the language that some, but not necessarily all, Romany people speak. I will say Romanes. The commonly used term traveller, often used to mean Romanys or Gypsies, Irish and Scottish travellers, Roma and new travellers, is something of a euphemism, because it absolves whoever is speaking of finding out details about the culture to which they refer. There are reasons for using it. Becky Taylor, for instance, uses it precisely because evidence in historical sources is rarely clear on who was, ethnically speaking, a Gypsy, or any other kind of traveller, because of the blanket way in which the term was used. The other reason people give for using the term traveller is that there are many pejorative uses of the word gypsy. There continues to be a great deal of misunderstanding in popular contemporary representations about the differences between Romanies or gypsies, other European Roma groups, Irish travellers and Scottish travellers. Sometimes differences are elided deliberately for political reasons. For instance, responses to evictions of Irish travellers might refer to a continuation of European genocidal policies towards Roma. As troubling as many of these evictions are, some people assert that they belong to a different narrative of harassment than that of the Roma in Europe. There's much work to do in terms of popularising the multiple historical narratives of these ethnic groups in Britain, without resorting to exclusive ethnic boundary lines that call on racial ideology or reinforce problematic ideas about authenticity, something I'm going to come back to. Having said this, Romani can for some people be as problematic a term as traveller, as it acts as a shorthand for a number of subgroups. Toby Zonneman notes that the historical texts studied by academics address a fictional, unified population. It's the academic's responsibility to be clear about whom he or she is writing. Something I want to highlight is that using any of these terms without thinking about what they mean can lead to us reinforcing stereotypes about the people the terms purport to describe. Assuming that a definition is set in stone is also a problem. Every time we use and discuss definitions, we slightly change what they mean, so definitions are always a process. To say, as an outsider, that Romanies or Gypsies are these people and this is their culture risks reinforcing essentialism. In other words, it can sound as if we're declaring this is who they are and always will be. In summary, anyone writing about this subject, whether he or she is a journalist, a scriptwriter, an academic, or someone writing promotional material, needs to be alert to the differences between the identities often grouped together as travellers and needs to consider the politics of the terms they use. Having said this, people from these communities have described how hearing the wrong term as part of an open and friendly attitude is preferable to hearing previously appropriate terms used pejoratively. I'm now going to talk about three related ideas that appear regularly in academic work and consider why we might want to think about some of them carefully. The first of these ideas is about the oral culture of Romanies or Gypsies, Roma and Scottish and Irish travellers. This idea is linked to what sort of material academics find in historical archives, the very old myth that Romanies or Gypsies have no history, and the idea that Romanies or Gypsies seem to have mysterious origins as a group. Many books are keen to talk about the Romani or Gypsy and Irish and Scottish traveller oral cultures of live song and storytelling, and emphasise that they left few archival traces behind, other than those written about, rather than by, individuals from those communities. Discussions of how we record oral cultures and their relationship to written history are important. However, even if writing was traditionally only employed by a small Romani or Gypsy elite in interactions with non-Romanis, the histories of many other communities were also written by a literate minority. Academics are continually finding sources that illuminate the experiences of non-white peoples in Europe and its empires, the working class, of women, of children. For some reason, we seem to accept that we won't find written material detailing the lives of Britain's Romanies or Gypsies and Irish and Scottish travellers. The risk in that acceptance is that people stop looking for the evidence that could tell us so much about a rich past. Some of our earliest documentary evidence of Romanies in Europe are letters guaranteeing safe conduct. Their holders understood them and were able to reproduce them or recognise a decent copy. Over the centuries, the countless transactions between and within communities left traces that are yet to be interpreted as part of Romani or Gypsy, Roma and Scottish and Irish traveller histories. I don't want to take anything away from the seriousness of the effects of persecution in Europe. One of the horrifying things about genocidal actions is that they take lives from the present and permanently remove stories for the future. The reasons that there are gaps in Romani or Gypsy history are not just to do with their diasporic, largely oral and distinct culture. They are also thanks to the oppression of this minority by the non-Romani majority, including in the sphere of education. However, Romani or Gypsy, Roma and Irish and Scottish traveller history is much more than an account of actions they suffered, and there's a significant amount of work to do to tell these diverse histories and make sure that people outside these communities and outside universities hear them. The perpetuation of the idea that a predominantly oral culture leaves no written trace affects the way we approach the writing of histories. The second idea that appears in academic work, in art and literature, and in the media and popular culture is that of the authentic gypsy. The authenticity of Romanis or gypsies has preoccupied legislators since their arrival in Britain, has interested scholars since the inception of something called Romani studies in the 18th century, is frequently discussed within Romani or Gypsy and Irish and Scottish traveller communities, and continues to trouble commentators today. How often do we hear people say, "Oh, I don't mean the real gypsies," the image of which lies securely in the past? Contemporary popular sources do not explain the significant cultural differences between groups, so non-Romani groups such as Irish travellers are often figured as troublesome counterfeits. They're not seen as a group and a culture in their own right, but held up against a mythical ideal of the authentic gypsy. The idea of the authentic gypsy was peddled by people studying Romanis or gypsies and those writing about them in fiction and non-fiction. Authenticity is tied up with visibility then. What we understand as real is also what we recognise. The hackneyed image of the Romani or gypsy with a brightly painted vado, kettle prop over a stick fire and an air of freedom and romance that circulates in culture, however fictional its creation, seems more credible than the ignored Romani or gypsy living in a house or serving in the army, or the Irish traveller with his or her own cultural practices. These old-fashioned images may be being replaced by other stereotypical ones, thanks to various TV and film representations, but the idea is the same. If the reality or representation of someone's identity does not match up to the popular image of the day, that identity either goes unrecognised or is labelled inauthentic. Ironically, people were and are asked to prove themselves genuine gypsies to avoid harassment, despite this label also frequently being the cause of that harassment. Historically, the authentic Romani or gypsy was presumed to belong to a specific racial category. As race gave way to ethnicity as a way of figuring a group or individual's heritage, authenticity remained part of that figuration. For instance, the ways in which new travellers are described usually deploys a vocabulary of the inauthentic, the pretender, the fake. Politically, it's difficult for people within Romani or Gypsy, Roma and Irish and Scottish traveller communities to be heard as an authentic voice or to provide analytical perspectives on their community's representation. The moment an individual claims enough objectivity to speak in this way, he or she is often considered, by people within and outside the community, to have travelled too far from the grassroots to offer a realistic and truthful account. Accusations of inauthenticity are occasionally made within the Romani or Gypsy community about others, whether because they've adopted different cultural practices, married into or out of the group, are not known to the speaker, do not know any Romanes, or come from a different culture. In some cases, English Gypsies or Romani Chels hesitate to use the label Romani because they consider their own backgrounds too hybrid to qualify. The word is seen to belong to specific families or those whose skin is a particular colour. Naturally, any group has the right to express what constitutes genuine membership of that group and argue against theories that posit their identity as performance. Authenticity is also about belonging. The ethics of authenticity really come into play here when those outside the community decide to delineate what belongs inside and outside the category of the authentic, and then use that category as the basis for legislation and service provision. This is why the interrogation of what people call authentic is necessary. It has the potential to exclude and to deny people their rights if they don't conform to the authentic standard. Understanding the history of what has been considered authentic also helps to throw light on the way we draw on this discourse today, and to whose detriment. It's true that for all sorts of non-sinister reasons, people are assigned or assign themselves to categories. The process of that needs to be articulated, however, as well as the ideologies and histories that inform the process. The third idea that crops up regularly when academics and cultural commentators talk about these communities is that of nomadism. It links with the concept of authenticity that I've just described, because in the minds of many non-Romanis or gypsies and non-travellers, the authentic Romani or gypsy must be nomadic. I've also heard this idea used to justify evictions in Britain in 2012. In literature, art and sociological writing, nomadism is often portrayed as romantic, free, purposeless and transgressive, in that it breaks the normal conventions of settled society. Romanis or gypsies are compared to wild birds who will sicken if caged. But this is not just an artistic image. Ideas about nomadism also inform the discourses of law and policy-making bodies. For example, Katrin Zimhandel has looked at how the idea of nomadism affected discussions of the Roma in policymaking in the European Union. Sometimes it was explicitly named as the most characteristic particularity of gypsies. At other moments, nomadism was taken as the feature defining a broader group encompassing more than just gypsies. No matter how frequently it occurs, the complexity of the conditions of nomadism is rarely explored. Few Romanis or gypsies were constantly nomadic, and not all travelling groups were Romanis or gypsies. Some groups were forcibly moved and/or resettled through enslavement, persecution, and discriminatory legislation. Others engaged in commercial nomadism, but would settle when circumstances allowed or dictated. This is not to say that fears about nomadism were unimportant in European attitudes towards the Romanis or gypsies, but failing to understand the history and the diversity of the nomadic experience allows stereotypes to stand. Why else, then, does academic work in this area matter? First, academics are expected to abide by ethical guidelines and undertake research meeting high standards, so that what they write is considered trustworthy by, for instance, policymakers and media producers. Is that trust well placed, as far as work on the histories and representations of Romanis or gypsies, Roma and Irish and Scottish travellers is concerned? Often, yes. Sometimes, no. Do academics ask the right questions of and about these communities? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, depending on what you consider the right questions to be. Are academics representative of the communities they write about? In this case, usually no. Do they need to be? A more complicated question. Academia has, in general, got better at this sort of self-questioning, but we should not underestimate the impact academic writing can have on perceptions of these communities, and also the positive contribution it can make to interpreting and critiquing representations found in the media, in novels and visual arts, and in historical documents. For instance, the issues connected to outsiders writing Romani or Gypsy and Irish and Scottish traveller histories are not restricted to the past. Autobiography is a growing genre from people who describe their identity in this way, but these are still in the main subject to the marketing and editing privileges of publishers, who often exoticise, romanticise or sensationalise personal experiences. Romani or Gypsy authors who aspire to produce texts that are analytical rather than personal, or wide-ranging rather than limited to individual families, find barriers to publication. Engaged academic studies can shed light on these representational limitations and demonstrate the power relations involved and the traditions they are part of. A large amount of academic work has focused on the archives, publications and lives of a group of people interested in Romanis in Britain in the 19th century. They formed the Gypsy Law Society towards the end of the century, and even though they were from non-Romani families, spent time living with Romani groups and learning Romanese. They were quick to point out the differences between authentic Romanis and non-authentic travelling groups or representations, and their writing has had a large impact on what people consider to be the authentic picture of Romanis or Gypsies since that time. David Mail has noted that, paradoxically, the thoroughness of their research has meant that many subsequent writers have run shy of conducting their own searches. The history of the Gypsy Lorist's influence on Romani or Gypsy identity in Britain and perceptions of it is certainly something we might continue to assess, but not to the detriment of other, as yet unexplored, archives and other cultural forms. I would describe the records and publications left by the Gypsy Law Society, dispersed across several institutions, including Liverpool and Leeds, as a privileged archive, because the people who wrote the texts had the resources to study and write and made their voices heard. This privilege was rarely available to the people they studied. In addition, their work is catalogued and abundant, so relatively easy to study, and they were colourful characters, lending biographical details and exoticism of their own. Theirs is not the only privileged archive, however. Writers often turn to the reports of government bodies and policymakers in their quest to tell something of the British Romani or Gypsy and Irish and Scottish traveller experience. Examples are the Tinkers in Scotland report, the 1948 report of the Northern Ireland Committee on Gypsies, and the Tinker questionnaire undertaken by the 1952 Irish Folklore Commission. There are many, many more. Writers such as Michael Hayes work hard to trace the effects of such official reports on wider perceptions of these groups, and it's essential that academics meet the challenge of locating the community's experiences within the official non-Romani and non-Irish or Scottish traveller voices that are held on record. In conclusion then, academic scholarship on the histories and representations of these communities has the potential to have a broad impact outside the university. When analysing various knowledges communicated in various forms about Romanis or Gypsies, Roma and Irish and Scottish travellers, writers must be aware of the diversity of the groups we're writing about, the history of the terms we use, and the privileged sources on which we might draw to the exclusion of others. In other words, our own work must be as open to critique as the texts we study.